So the book group meeting on Wednesdays is, as I think all most of you know, we're reading the book Teachings of the Earth, and at the very beginning of chapter two, he brings up something that has been very near and dear to my heart for a long time in my monastic training. And let me just read what he says as sort of an introduction in the book. He says, "Very recently in the West, we've become aware of the existence of an entirely different way of understanding reality. Its origins go back to a piece of writing once known only to Buddhists. In the Flower Garland Sutra, composed in 7th century China, a universe is described in which everything interpenetrates with everything else in identity and interdependence." So the Flower Garland Sutra, the Flower Ornament Sutra, also known as the Avatamsaka Sutra, and most of us know that that particular scripture is one of the scriptures that's kind of one of the official scriptures for the Soto Zen Church. And Chan Buddhism and Zen Buddhism have particularly adopted that scripture in terms of its teaching and kind of its trajectory in terms of our practice. So what the reality that's described in the Avatamsaka Sutra is a description of what's called Indra's net. And let me read for you one translation from the Avatamsaka of Indra's net. "Far away in the heavenly abode of the great god Indra, there is a wonderful net which has been hung by some cunning artificer in such a manner that it stretches out indefinitely in all directions. In accordance with the extravagant tastes of deities, the artificer has hung a single glittering jewel at the net's every node. And since the net itself is infinite in dimension, the jewels are infinite in number. There hang the jewels, glittering like stars of the first magnitude, a wonderful sight to behold. If we now arbitrarily select one of these jewels for inspection and look closely at it, we will discover that in its polished surface there are reflected all the other jewels in the net, infinite in number. Not only that, but each of the jewels reflected in this one jewel is also reflecting all the other jewels, so that the process of reflection is infinite." So, this particular image, John Dido Luri says in the Teachings of the Earth, he says that actually this metaphor analogy, this description of Indra's net, is actually a description of realized reality. It's something that Buddhist men and women over the centuries, going back 2,500 years, have tried to use to describe to somebody what reality, if I can put it this way, is really like. And what he also says, which I find brings a smile to my face, he also says, John Dido Luri, that he says that not too many people over the centuries have taken this teaching very seriously. That is, he says, until the 20th century, when the discovery, as it were, of holography, holograms, holographs came into existence. And people started realizing that a hologram, a holograph, behaved exactly like what Indra's net is talking about. So, and you just very, very briefly, if you take a photographic film that has a holograph on it and you project laser light through it, you get, as most of you know, you get an image cast, a three-dimensional image cast from the laser light. If you cut that holograph up into smaller and smaller pieces and still shine the light through it, you still get the same image. So in other words, what's going on is that each part of the holograph, not sure which is which, contains the whole. And then John Dieterlurie says that he talks about what he calls holographic mind, which is a very modern and contemporary way of saying Indra's net mind. And he says that actually that's the mind that we need to realize in the 21st century. That's the mind that we're going to need to be in touch with, living from, realizing, experiencing, if we're going to actually be able to address the problems that are facing us in the world today. So in other words, we actually have to understand the nature of reality as one whole, one inseparable whole. And our actions, our behavior, our solutions have to actually address the whole at all times. So there's one, I didn't do too much looking into this in depth, but there's a Chinese monk, back in the 700s, I believe it was, in China, who basically took this description of Indra's net and basically formed the precursors to a separate school in Buddhism, known as the Huayan school of Buddhism. And there's this very interesting collection of his writings and what he does in these writings, very similar to like Dogen and a lot of the masters, is he has this dialogue between himself and a questioner. And basically the questioner asks him things so that he can elucidate the meaning of, in this case, Indra's net. So the monk's name was Tu Shun, and he says, if you sit in one jewel, then you are sitting in all the jewels in every direction. He says, why? Because in one jewel, there are all the jewels. If there is one jewel in all the jewels, then you are sitting in all the jewels too. Since in one jewel you go into all the jewels without leaving this one jewel, so in all jewels you enter one jewel without leaving this one jewel. Now, if you're like me and didn't completely follow all of that on first reading and so on, basically what he is saying is that, now remember, each jewel is any portion of the universe you choose to pick. And in this case, let's pick the jewel as being each and every one of us. And so what it's saying, it says that it basically, in each jewel contains all the jewels. So you yourself contain the entire universe. So in every jewel in the entire universe, there is also present you as one jewel. So in other words, You can go anywhere in the universe and you are present there also. And this is what John Dido Lurie is saying. This is what he's calling 21st century mind. And this is also the mind of the ancient Buddhas. Because to know that the entire universe is contained within yourself, and to know that you are everywhere in the entire universe, that's as close as we can get verbally, sort of conceptually, to describing that realized reality that Buddhas have. Now, what I said at the beginning of the ceremony was that if you fully take on board, at least even as a concept, of the fact that within you there's the entire universe and that you are present everywhere in the universe, if you really take that on board, we really, really need to look very deeply at our practice. And what I chose to do in this case was to look at the precepts that Reverend Master Jiyu handed down to us. And I've picked a few of them to look at in terms of this teaching of Indra's net, and try to pull out of it even more deeply what's going on when we're doing our practice. So what I'm going to be looking at is the Serene Reflection Meditation booklet, which you can get directly as a PDF online from Shasta Abbey's website. And towards the end of the book, it has the precepts, the Kyojikaimon, and also with the commentary from Reverend Master Jiyu. So, almost as a mantra that one can keep in mind when looking at all of these things, is I've boiled it down to saying that the entire universe is within you, and you are present everywhere in the universe. So keep that in mind as I bring up some of these things. So the commentary to the second precept of do not steal, it says, the mind and its object are one. The gateway to enlightenment stands open wide. There is nothing whatsoever that can be stolen. And from the understanding presented to us in Indra's net, that's literally just a direct, plain, straightforward statement. It couldn't be more straightforward. The mind and its object are one. The object is within you already, and always has been. And what's really interesting is that immediately Reverend Master Jiyu jumps into, with the commentary, she's saying that, okay, this precept is stating a very straightforward truth. But as most of us are well aware, we don't experience the mind and its object being one. We're not aware that there's nothing whatsoever that can be stolen. And so she immediately moves into saying, all we have to do is ask the dragon for permission to enter. Ask the dragon if we may see the jewel, and it will be given to us. And isn't that fascinating that it's being stated very plainly about ask the dragon, all we have to do is ask the dragon for permission to enter, and we may see the jewel, and it will be given to us. that jewel that's referred to in Indra's net. And then she says, he who tries to rob himself, wouldn't think of it normally as robbing from ourselves, but if we contain the entire universe, then again, that's a very straightforward, very clear statement. What it's touching on, which I'll get to, want to develop a little bit later on, is that because the mind and object are already one, because we would only be stealing from ourselves, then what's the problem here is actually our mind and the depth at which the mind is actually seeing reality and how it's understanding reality. I'll get to that in just a minute. He who tries to rob himself, he who tries to steal from the treasure house, can never have the treasure. And then she gives two examples. Erudition is as this, taking drugs is as this. All you have to do is ask the Lord of the house, and you may know and possess all things. The gateway to enlightenment does indeed stand open wide, for the true mind of the Buddha and the jewel are one and the same. Ask the Lord of the house at all times. Remember that he who counts another's treasure can never have his own. He who steals can only ever rob himself. So it's really, in this case, it's the mind that has the thought, the idea, the concept to steal, the mind that has this sense that I am separate from objects around me, that moves us in this direction to steal. But I thought it was just quite beautiful how the word jewel gets touched on twice just in that one commentary. The true mind of the Buddha and the jewel are one and the same. I mean, if that's not coming from Indra's net. Okay, let me touch on a few more of the precepts. So there's the next one about do not covet. You know, and of course we have the three hindrances, the three poisons of greed, anger, and delusion or ignorance. And so we have the tendency to want to grasp after things. We have the tendency to push things away. And so this is touching on the tendency to want to grab onto things. Do not covet. The doer, the doing, and that which has the doing done to it are immaculate. Therefore, there is no desire. It is the same doing as that of the Buddhas. And what the commentary is touching on is the fact that, so the doer, the doing, and that which has the doing done to it, the doer and the object and the act of grasping are already immaculate, they're already whole. They're already, the entire universe is already within us. All of these things are already ours. And basically the commentary sums it up by saying, thus we think there is a difference. Thus we think there is an ability to covet and something to covet. Thus man makes mistakes. So what's interesting in any of these given precepts is that she's both talking about 21st century mind, i.e. Indra's net mind, the mind of the Buddhas, and then she's touching on the error we have in our perception of reality. The error is that there's an object that's separate from me. The error is that there is something desirable, something that I need, something that I have to have. And when we act on that incomplete and unwhole frame of mind, we make mistakes. Okay, moving down a little bit more on the precepts, there's the one about do not speak against others. And this, of course, has been one that we've been deeply challenged with on over the last 4 or so years in terms of what has been going on in our country and in the world. But listen to this commentary. Do not speak against the Lord of the house. That comes right after do not speak against others. Every person, every being is the temple of the Lord wherein the Lord dwells, the still water wherein the dragon lives. This is taking the Indra's net image, coming at it from the other direction, namely that not our jewel, but every other jewel contains the entire universe. If you speak against others, you speak against the Lord of the house. Do not try to divide the Lord of the house. Do not try to cause war within the Lord. Do not try to make the Lord make war upon himself. How about if we were to say it as, if you speak against others, you speak against the universe. You speak against the whole, the oneness. Do not try to divide that oneness. Do not try to divide the universe. Do not try to cause war within the universe. Do not try to make the universe make war upon itself. Again, it's looking at it. I think you could say that speaking against others is one significant aspect of the poison of anger, you know, the tendency of pushing things away very strongly. What is there to push away if within you is everything? It's already there. You're never going to be able to push it away anyway. And then there's a quote here again from some scripture that says, in Buddhism, the truth and everything are the same. The same law, the same enlightenment, and the same behavior. Do not allow anyone to speak of another's faults. Do not find fault with the Lord of the house. Do not allow anyone to make a mistake in Buddhism. To speak against the Lord of the house, to speak against the universe, to speak against the whole, is the gravest mistake of which I know. So hopefully with a few of these examples so far, what we've got is that over and over again, if we have the eyes to see, the ears to hear, it's very clearly being pointed to us that reality is Indra's net. Life is in an inseparable whole. And we've already seen that stealing, coveting, i.e., you know, greed, desire, speaking against others, i.e. pushing away anger and so on. We've already seen these are three ways in which the mind isn't seeing reality as one inseparable whole. It's seeing it in a fractured way. It's seeing it in parts and pieces. And consequently, when we behave from that point of view, we are creating karma, we're causing suffering. So a few more of the precepts here are, do not be proud of yourself and devalue others. And I've often heard that precept spoken of, flipping it around the other way. Do not devalue yourself and put others on a pedestal. The commentary here is quite beautiful. Every Buddha and every ancestor realizes that he is the same as the limitless sky and as great as the universe. When they realize their true body, there is nothing within or without. When they realize their true body, they are nowhere more upon the earth. There is nothing to be proud of and nothing to be devalued. But again, just another very, very straightforward, very clear statement of that reality, that Indra's net reality. Okay, and then another precept comes up, and it comes at it from another angle. Do not be mean in giving either dharma or wealth. And I think that this one, let's see here, sort of jumping through the commentary here, in terms of being mean, not being mean in giving either dharma or wealth, she says that all contain the Lord, all express the Lord, each in its own way and each perfectly. One Dharma, one enlightenment, every Buddha, every ancestor. No difference, nothing greater, nothing smaller, nothing truer, nothing less true. When all is within the Lord, when all is within the One, the wholeness, all stand straight together. A million Buddhas stand in one straight line. In the precept about not being angry, the commentary actually has a direct description for us of what we should actually do when anger arises for us. She says, you know, do not be angry. There is no retiring, no going, no truth, no lie. There is a brilliant sea of clouds. There is a dignified sea of clouds. And to my mind, when I read that, I'm reading it as also there is a brilliant sea of jewels. There is a dignified sea of jewels. Just there is that going on which causes us to see unclearly. But if we truly look, if we look with care, and to my mind, if we truly look and if we look with care, isn't that a beautiful way of describing what we're trying to do in meditation? No matter how angry the person is who is with us, we may see in him too the Lord, the wholeness, if we are truly looking, if our own ego is out of the way. And in seeing the Lord in him, he can see the Lord in us. Thus should we be when there is anger, knowing that nothing whatsoever can touch the truth. And I guess to my mind, nothing can touch the truth implies that because the truth is the entirety of the universe, because it's everything, all as one, there's nothing separate from that that can touch itself. And it can only simply be, as it were, experienced as the One. Not only can it not be touched, it can't be destroyed, it can't be harmed, it can't be changed. So I think the last precept I wanted to look at is the one about do not defame the three treasures. And what seems really significant about this one is that, yes, we can have faith and trust that the teaching of Indra's net, the teaching of the mind of the ancient Buddhas, we can trust and have faith that that's the case. But then, how to continue moving forward as we are, as a seeming individual, doing our own practice, living our own lives. And here's where the last precept about do not defame the three treasures is so special. and important. It says to do something by ourselves without copying others is to become an example to the world, and the merit of doing such a thing becomes the source of all wisdom. Do not criticize, but accept everything. And then the commentary goes on to say that the Lord of the house does not always do things in the normally accepted ways, nor do the Buddhas and ancestors. So to move forward with all of this, it's really, really important that we turn within and deeply trust ourselves, deeply have faith in ourselves in terms of the reality that seems to be true for us, the reality that's there for us. It would be interesting to compare notes at some point, but I know for myself, I can think back a lot, particularly when I was younger, and I think it would be the same for most of you, is that when we're younger, we're taught to kind of look around us towards older people for examples of what to do, how to live our lives. And yet there was this sense within me of wanting to proceed in my life in certain ways, and clearly seeing that around me that wasn't the examples I was getting. That wasn't, well, and in some cases it was very clearly discouraged to not follow my inner sense. Let me read. Well, as I'm saying that, what comes to mind is the line in Rules for Meditation where Great Master Dogen says, withdraw within and reflect upon yourself. And I don't seem to recall until I got into my 20s, I don't recall too many adults I encountered prior to that saying, withdraw within. Trust yourself. I wanted to try to, so in chapter 2, there's the description of Tozan Ryokai's sort of progression in his training, his life of training. And there's at one point here, let me quick find it here. So I won't go through the dialogue that Tozan Ryokai has with his master, but John Daido Luri's commentary is, so he's referring to the master and saying the old man was trying to tell him, really trust yourself, have faith in yourself. And the reason for that is that, as he says, the 10,000 things reduced to the self. In other words, the entire universe reduces down to you. The whole thing happens right here in this very moment. So that we can trust that when we drop into our meditation, either formally or any time during the day, the entire universe is there for us. And it's there to help. It's there to assist. It's there to guide us. Because, as we know, the universe, from the point of view of Buddhism, is compassion, love, and wisdom. So I think the last thing I wanted to bring up with all of this was in the Tripitaka, the Theravadan compilation of all of the Buddha's teachings, you have one work called the Dhammapada. And the very, very first teaching in the Dhammapada, it goes like this. It says, the mind is the forerunner of all states. The mind is the forerunner of all evil states. Mind is chief, mind made are they. If one speaks or acts with a wicked mind, because of that, suffering follows one, even as the wheel follows the hoof of the draft ox. And then the thing about the very first teaching is it's in this section called the twin verses. So you have the second verse, which says, mind is the forerunner of all good states. Mind is chief, mind made are they. If one speaks or acts with pure mind, because of that, happiness follows one, even as one's shadow that never leaves. And what I wanted to bring up with those two teachings was that the mind being referred to here is the mind that each and every one of us has that perceives, structures, conceives the reality that we live in, that we exist in. If that mind is the mind of Indra's net, if that mind is the mind of the ancient Buddhas, then because of that mind, we will always act perceptually. We'll always act compassionately, wisely, and lovingly, because the mind of the ancient Buddhas is the mind of totality. It's the mind of realizing that all is one, the universe is one. But any mind that's short of that is going to be a mind that has divided up reality in particular ways. And so you have the angry mind, or you have the fearful mind, or you have the desirous mind. And all of these minds are looking at life and reality through a particular lens. They're looking at it through a particular filter that actually is blocking out. It's not seeing the totality that's actually really there. Now, as it was stated, the Indra's net mind, the mind of the ancient Buddhas, is something that we actually have to realize for ourselves. It's something that we need to eventually fully open up to. But short of that, we have these wise teachings, we have the commentary in the precepts, we have the teaching of Indra's net, that we can always try to keep in mind with the mind of faith and trust, and base our actions as best we can on that. Realizing, you know, being very honest with ourselves, catching ourselves and realizing before we act, is the mind with which I'm going to act on this, is it Indra's net mind? Or is it perhaps coarsely or subtly the stealing mind, the coveting mind, the angry mind, the criticizing mind, etc.? And then it becomes fairly clear, I think, that if we act compassionately and wisely and lovingly, that action is reflected, is distributed throughout the entire universe. And conversely, if we act selfishly, you know, greedily, hatefully, ignorantly, that also will be reflected throughout the entire universe. So everywhere we go, We will be the recipients of that greed or anger that we have just created anew in the world, in the universe. Or everywhere we go, after being compassionate and wise in our actions, everywhere we go, we will encounter a more compassionate and loving and kind universe. So that's what I had to offer this morning. And if there anything else anyone wants to bring up, touch on, or talk about?